Welcome to Augusta Free Press on Facebook. I am Chris Graham, joined by Rod Mullins, and we're going to be talking NASCAR after a busy weekend at Pocono Speedway and a couple of races, back-to-back races on Saturday and Sunday. And we look ahead now to another busy weekend, a joint weekend, NASCAR and IndyCar at the Brickyard. So, Rod, let's start back in Pocono. And two winners, Kevin Harvick, Denny Hamlin, two thrilling races, a little bit of rain. It wouldn't be 2020 in NASCAR without some rain to delay some things. But all in all, a good weekend for NASCAR.
Yeah, it was a good weekend altogether. I think it was probably some of the better racing. I don't think a lot of people anticipated what kind of racing you want to have, especially starting on a Saturday. You have to keep your car unless you totally wrecked it or something like that. But most of your car has to stay intact and then be ready for the Sunday race to turn around. Alex Bowman, for example, he raced on Saturday, ended up having to change an engine out and going to the back of the pack. So there were things that you had to take into consideration in that particular instance when they raced on Sunday. But overall, I thought it was some of the best racing I had seen so far on the season. Kevin Harvick on Saturday with a win. He'd been looking for a win there for a while, you know, coming up with especially Pocono. He'd never won at Pocono before. He wins that race at Pocono, pulls that off. And then, you know, the talk was that Denny Hamlin had placed himself up there toward the front with a really good car on Saturday. And sure enough, if he didn't come right back on Sunday and win the thing on Sunday, and that's one of the places where he won one of his first races when he began his career with Joe Gibbs Racing. I mean, you know, the guy's talented. I mean, he's a lot of people can jump on him for the way that he drives sometimes. But, you know, a lot of people are feeling right now that I know it's probably about middle of the season. We're traditionally July 4th, but a lot of people feel like this is his season to lose right now. He's just running really well right now. And Denny Hamlin's got to give him a lot of credit. They really showed up on Sunday.
Yeah, Hamlin, 4 wins this season. Harvick, 3 wins this season. So those guys really are kind of separating themselves right now. Hey, on Sunday, it was interesting. We mentioned the rain this weekend. It was on Sunday's race, during Sunday's race. And we got to a situation where if there had been any more rain on Sunday, we might not have gotten all the laps in. As it was, they were finishing up. In fact, Victory Lane was had to set up some lights, temporary lights, right, because the race ended in the dark. But they were driving into that turn, the tunnel turn there, with sun in the way. Just a lot going on there on Sunday with that weather for Hamlin to be able to pull that win out. A lot of good driving there at the end by a few guys to keep themselves in position.
Yeah, Saturday was, you know, Saturday, of course, was the rain and different things like that that they had. Sunday, of course, they had a delay due mostly to lightning more than anything else. And that's what slowed them down, which, of course, they have to take that precaution. You know, it's the same thing like in any of the major sports. You know, if it lightens, every time you see it lightning or something, or they pick it up, it's a 30-minute delay is what it is. But fortunately, it wasn't that much of a delay this past weekend. But, yeah, they started, considering that the race started, supposed to have started at 4 o'clock, and it ended up starting closer to 5, I guess, is when it ended up starting. That kind of pushed that window on the daylight into dark scenario. Pocono has no lights, and so they were trying to do the best they could to try to finish that race up. And then, like you mentioned, driving into the sun right there, going on that back stretch, and then seeing that sun as it's starting to go down, that's rough on a driver. Fortunately, you've got one of those polarized visors that kind of hang down in front of you. You've got plexiglass, but you've also got a sheet of a thin plastic that kind of goes over that they strip off each and every time that you go into the pits. But, you know, considering bug debris and everything else, and you're not taking that many pit stops, unless like on Sunday, you had several wrecks on Sunday, that kind of made a difference. And so it was hard to be able to see sometimes, but, you know, still they managed to pull this off and get it done right about the time that the sun had set. And like you said, they pulled some lights into Victory Lane and they were able to finish up.
If I remember right, I think I have this right. The dust up with Kyle Busch and Ryan Blaney may have happened in that area where you had the limited visibility because you're looking right at the sun. Do I remember that right?
Yeah, something like that. I know what you're talking about. And it's one of those, I think, of where, at least from my vantage point, the way that I looked at it, Kyle Busch was coming back down onto the track a little bit. I think he already had his line or what he thought. Ryan Blaney was full throttle. I mean, there was no letting off from where he was at, and he was committed to staying in that line. If he jerked, he was going to take off and go up the racetrack. He could have caused a wreck himself. So, I mean, well, what else do you do? You hit Kyle Busch out there on the track, and Kyle was none too talkative about the whole thing on Sunday. He was he just pretty much told the people when they were interviewing him post-race, he said, "You saw what happened out there. I just don't want to talk about it right now." So NASCAR has kind of reviewed that. I don't think there's been anything that's come of this so far between Ryan Blaney and Kyle Busch of any kind of fines or anything like that for any kind of hard racing or anything, because NASCAR's kind of lacks that back a little bit. But I'm sure that Kyle Busch, he has a very short memory, like elephants, and he'll remember it come Brickyard Racing. None better place for Kyle Busch to be able to put somebody into the wall would be at the Brickyard. He would love to do that. And so I'm sure Ryan Blaney's going to be on his guard come Sunday.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything finable there. It looked like there was lap traffic ahead and
right
sun and, you know, yeah, hard racing. So, yeah, they ought to be able to go out there and race. That doesn't mean you don't get mad about it, but, yeah, I think that should be fine. So I know what I was going to say. I was going to talk about how I feel for the announcers. As a guy who's done announcing, has broadcasting for several years now, and I have had to broadcast through some baseball rain delays. They're going to run out of material. I mean, between having to show documentaries and they trotted out this weekend content of various broadcasters in their homes and, like, you know, doing projects at home with their kids and stuff like that. And then just having to sit there in the booth in Charlotte and talk things up. Man, oh man, you know, we got to get some dry weather here so we don't have to watch all, you know, we're out of documentaries. We're out of home footage. Mm-hmm. There's nothing else they can do now.
Well, and you know, this is another worldly aspect of what we're starting to see. I picked up an article and started reading a little bit on awful announcing over on the internet here in the last couple of days. And one was talking about the future of what the pandemic is going to hold for these announcers once they start going back and they start playing sports, because I don't know how the baseball situation is right now, but NASCAR committed at the beginning of the season when they renewed this season after a 10-week delay that they were going to put Mike Joy and they were going to put Jeff Gordon and Larry McReynolds in the booth there, as we call it, down in the broadcast center, Steve Byrne Broadcast Center in Charlotte. And that's what they were going to do. Now, I don't know what NBC's plans are. Of course, they've got the Brickyard coming up this weekend. We'll kind of flip-flop a couple of times because Fox still has a race they have to carry at Kentucky Speedway coming up after the Brickyard race. So they're going to kind of flip-flop back and forth. I don't know how NBC's going to do this. NBC has not really said anything about it. It's kind of going to be a surprise, I guess. And maybe NBC's going to take them, put them in the booth, separate them out a little bit up there in the booth there at Indianapolis. I don't know. But they're talking about, what does this hold for college football season? What's this going to hold for Major League Baseball season going down the stretch? Are these guys going to be in studio reading cues, you know, reading teleprompters, everything else there, and then having to describe the action from 9 or 10 monitors set up in front of them with all these different camera angles? It's going to be difficult for some of them because, Chris, I don't know how you feel about it, but for me, I have to be in the press box. I have to see what's going on. I have to know what's going on to kind of get an idea of, you know, I guess the atmosphere, so to speak, about what's going on at a particular sporting event. And I know it's got to be tough on Mike Joy and Jeff Gordon right now at this point. And Jeff Gordon's had a couple of miscues, and Mike Joy has as well during some of this race coverage, because either their mind's been somewhere else and they've looked at the monitor and then they've missed out on something, or they just miss being at the track.
We must have read the same article. I've read on awful announcing. I ended up writing an article from my own experience to go into the thought process. You know, I've done the work with ESPN3, ESPN Plus the last 5 years, mm-hmm. Calling football, college football, college baseball, college soccer, college wrestling as well. You know, honestly, being there is fine, but it took me a while to learn the first season I did it. You actually have to watch more the monitors. Actually, it was imparted unto me a few games in, hey, you need to watch the monitors more because, you know, you need to describe the picture that the people at home are seeing. And, you know, and so when I started doing that, I started realizing, man, you know, especially in baseball, sitting in the press box behind home plate, you don't see the strike zone. You know, you're right. Elevated. And so I have learned, I mean, when I'm at a game, I'm actually watching the TV more than I'm watching the game. And so I can see how that's done and how it can be done. And for the most part, I don't think once you're watching a race, I don't think you really notice it, that they're not there. And so, you know, and I can only imagine, see, I work at ESPN3, ESPN Plus, minor, you know, Division I AA college football, you know, not the highest level of college baseball. We don't have a lot of camera angles. We don't have a lot of stuff. I can imagine it at that level with all the things they have, even when they're there at the track, you're there, but you're also watching 100 things going on at one time. And then you got somebody in your ear talking the whole time too. And that's, right. At first, that was the hardest thing for me to get used to, was hearing two different people talking into, you know, two different ears and having to also talk at the same time. And so in the end, I don't know. I mean, you know, football season this year, I'll be doing football again this fall. Football season's far enough away. I don't know that we know now, because you know, football season is 2 months away. I don't know that we know now what football will be like from a broadcast standpoint. Baseball, from what I'm reading, they are actually going to have guys in the stadium calling the games, but I don't know that that's an advantage or disadvantage. So that just that's my personal take on that.
Well, in the NASCAR field, I think to me, I think it's that camaraderie that they have between each other. You know, Mike Joy, Jeff Gordon, some of them. Jeff Gordon, of course, talks to some of the teams. He talks with most of the teams anyway. Talks between them. If he's not talking to them at the track, he's talking to them during the week. Mike Joy's about the same way, but there's still a thing about being at the track and then seeing someone there that's calling a race. Like the first time I ever went to Bristol, I saw this figure walk through the infield and I was just totally shocked at who it was. I mean, it was almost like 100 degrees down there in the infield because of all the pavement, the black pavement that was down there and the heat being pulled in. And here comes Ned Jarrett in a turtleneck, not even cracking a sweat or anything, walks into the room, gets his notes, and says hi to a couple of people. He's just kind of getting the feel for it. And then he walks back out of the press center or the media center and goes back up to the booth there on top. And I think there's some of them that want to have that kind of interaction back and forth with them to kind of maybe get an inside story or get an inside feel about what's going on with the car a little bit. That's kind of hurt some of those pit reporters, pit road reporters, because they're having to step back so much and they cannot be in that same little space confined to some of those other people with the pit crew and stuff in the team. So there's a difference there. Yeah, you're right. There's a big difference with it. But, you know, for NBC, I've got a feeling that probably NBC is going to probably pull a good one on us this weekend and they're going to show up there in the booth. And I think Dale Jr. will probably be glad if they are in the booth, because he said he would rather be there than to be in a studio. He said it's hard enough sitting in a studio, but for him, he's just actually got to be there, feel it, live it, to be able to know what's going on.
Oh, there are definitely advantages. You get to, I don't know how the weather impact, and it does obviously impact the NASCAR race. I know being on scene for a game that's outside, if you know that the wind's blowing a certain direction, that might impact something. You know, if you can see clouds on the horizon at a NASCAR race, maybe it will have an impact on strategies. You don't get that when you're in a studio in Charlotte, if the race is in Indianapolis. So there are definitely advantages there, but you know, I don't know that you lose a lot. So and then again, hey, I think we're all just glad we have NASCAR. But it was an interesting article, and it definitely sparked something in me to want to talk more. You've mentioned Indy this weekend, a big weekend for racing in general, NASCAR and IndyCar, and a very busy weekend. I think there's also an ARCA race on Saturday evening. That's not
ARCA race, Xfinity race. I think there's a truck race, maybe. But I definitely know there's an ARCA race and an Xfinity race. They're going to be running the inside part of the road course, is what they're going to be doing there at Indy.
Triple header on Saturday, double header on Sunday. What are your thoughts heading into this weekend with all this racing going on?
I think this is probably the ultimate pick-me-up on the 4th of July weekend that you'd possibly come up with. You know, where a lot of people were probably wondering and probably crying over the fact that Daytona had lost the Firecracker 400 or the Coke Zero 400. And, you know, at first when I saw that schedule and I thought, they're going to Indianapolis on the 4th of July. Well, you know, that sounds kind of weird, but at the same time, that's a plus because you're going to the heart of racing country, as far as I'm concerned. When you're going to Indianapolis, you know, I remember the first time when I went to the first Brickyard race, I had a chance to have tickets, and I went to the set in the paddock section there at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. And I'm telling you, I felt like I was walking on holy ground when I walked into that track, because I told my wife, and my wife looked at me and she says, I don't get it. And I said, you're walking, it's almost like you're walking into Mecca, or you're walking into this holy place, because all these races have taken place there before. And then here you have, quote unquote, at this time in the 90s, I said, here you have the most southern redneck sport of all time that shows up now at a place in the north, especially in the Midwest, and comes into Indianapolis. And I remember those headlines. The people in Indianapolis were just overjoyed that they had NASCAR there for the first time. They were overjoyed with it. This time around, I don't know. The popularity with it has kind of fallen over the years. It's been especially rough toward the end of July, first part of August, when they were running the race. I think this July 4th weekend is going to be a big plus for them to be able to have that race at Indianapolis. I think the ownership change there at Indianapolis Motor Speedway with Roger Penske, I think they've got a little bit more of a stronger commitment now from what they had before of only being a one-time-a-year race. Penske is planning on running more races at Indianapolis, which include the road course on the inside part of the oval itself, the shape of the racetrack. But I think it's going to be a good race. I know a lot of these guys are going to be shooting for a win there at Indianapolis. They always bring some of the, I call them the baddest paint designs that you could possibly bring on a car. I know Clint Bowyer, I believe, is going to be bringing the one about the Navy we had talked about earlier, undefeated since 1776. And we'd already talked about that. But there's going to be a lot of unique paint schemes, I think, coming up this weekend.
Yeah, you make it so I've got a segue to this now. you talk about the paint schemes. I sprung this one on you right before we came here on the show. We probably don't have to comment upon it, but you talked about paint schemes. Corey LaJoie starting this weekend. New paint scheme for non-races, paid for by Patriots of America PAC. It's going to be a Trump 2020 paint scheme for non-races for Corey LaJoie. And so we'll have the full gamut of political opinions out there with that coming up on the weekend, starting this weekend, I should say. Mm-hmm. So who traditionally runs well at Indy, and who might we look at as some of the favorites going into this weekend?
I would say probably who's going to run well this coming weekend. Kyle Busch will probably run well. He likes Indy. He likes the lay of the track. Kind of reminds him a lot of Las Vegas to a certain degree, but it's more stretched out. You've got your flat parts. You've got your slightly inclined banking going into the turns, into one and two, and then on the back stretch, three and four, the way that they come out. So I think Kyle Busch, who's been having a not-so-good season this year, might be able to rebound a little bit more. I also look for Denny Hamlin to have a good race as well. Martin Truex. So we've already mentioned three of the Joe Gibbs drivers right there. I really can't count out of Stewart Haas Racing. Kevin Harvick's going to have a good race out of his car this coming weekend. I really don't want to rule out Clint Bowyer, but I definitely want to look at maybe some others. Kurt Busch. Kurt Busch has been racing well here as of late. He was the only Chevrolet that was leading laps. They didn't lead a lap on Saturday at Pocono. He turned around and led about the first stage, I think, of the race at Pocono this past weekend. So that was the first time Chevy had really led some laps, and I don't know how many races there. And so I think Kurt Busch has got a good chance at doing well at that track. It's anybody's ball game, because when you get to Indianapolis, the things that you traditionally look out for are the things that usually, I don't know, something goes awry before it's over with in the way that track is. And the track is rough on things. They've compared it to a Martinsville that is kind of stretched out over you know, this 2 mile stretch, the way that it's shaped. And so it'll pose some problems for them. I know that some of the best drivers have got there before and they've loved the track. And then there's been some of the drivers who love the track going into it and said, I really wish we didn't have to race here because it's rough on equipment. So you've got a tale of two cities, so to speak.
I keep pulling for Jimmy Johnson to get something going. He just can't seem to buy a break this season. He runs well, and then something happens. And, you know, he'd love to go out in his last season with success there in Indy.
Well, and yeah, I probably should have mentioned Jimmy Johnson there too. Jimmy Johnson, he has won a race there before. He has won at Brickyard. So, you know, I don't think he's a stranger to being in victory lane there whatsoever, but I agree with you. The guy has been having so much trouble here as the season's been going on. You know, they race well. They're on the verge of a win. It was like, you know, also here a couple of years ago when they were that first win down there at Charlotte at the Roval race. You know, he could have broke that winning streak, that losing streak there with a win if he and Martin Truex hadn't got together right there at the very end of the race. He's had a lot of bad luck, and I know that people have said, crew chief, different things like that, him being separated from Chad Knaus and Chad Knaus moving over to William Byron. You know, I don't think that's a lot of it. I think it's how you prepare the car. And I think the car has been prepared in a number of ways really well in some of the races. And I think it's also been, I think Jimmy to some degree has, you know, this little bit of, I don't know, bad karma or something hanging on his shoulder or something about, you know, a particular race, or there's something there that just isn't, I don't know, just doesn't jive with him, so to speak. And he's just not been where he needs to be at. And I think he needs to be in victory lane at least. I'm like Jeff Gordon said on the race coverage this past weekend, let him have just one win before the season's over with. And that's what I would like to see too. I know people can't stand Jimmy Johnson, but you know, I'm just going to tell you, he's one of the most prolific drivers that NASCAR's had out there on the track in a number of years. You know, yeah, he's going to be in the Hall of Fame. Don't count that out or anything, but he should come up with a win sometime this season, or at least I hope he does.
It'd be a really nice way to send him off. Well, Rod, I think we covered it all. And hey, a week with the only controversy we had was on the track. That's great. That's what NASCAR should be about. So it's glad to have a controversy free podcast here with you today, Rod.
Thank goodness. I'm telling you, I didn't know what was going to happen next. I was afraid somebody was going to say that they were going to put, now you were going to tell me that they were going to put Trump's face on Corey LaJoie's car or something, because Corey LaJoie's had his face on his car for most of the season. He has his face out there, and Lord knows what he's going to have out there week to week. And he's got this beard that hangs down on the front of that Ford. And I'm like, oh gosh, what's Corey going to do this week? And now at least we know it's Donald Trump's face. President Trump's face will not be on the hood of that car, so at least we're spared there. But I would rather see Corey's beard there than, you know, something. So, but we'll take it from there.
They've got 8 more weeks. They could put Trump's face on there eventually.
They'll eventually put it on there and stuff. Or they may even put that the way that President Trump's hair wings back, so to speak. That would look nice on the fenders going back through there. You know how it's kind of windblown back across the fenders.
Yeah, see there that. You go. So, there
I
you
don't go. Know, but that's I don't know. Maybe we're getting sinking into the PR hell or something right now of how you promote a car in NASCAR. I don't know.
No, that's a good way to wrap it up. Well, follow Rod on Twitter. He has a lot of updates on what's going on in NASCAR, and of course we share his posts during races on the weekend. So, Rod, thank you for your time. We'll talk to you again next week.
Appreciate it, Chris. Thanks.